And now, here is the man who will show you how to feel better, look better, Jack LaLanne.
Now I'm going to show you how simple this all is. We're going to start out and we're going to work the body from the bottom of the feet right up to the top of your cute little head. You with me?
I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. Come along and join me for a fascinating conversation with Elaine LaLanne, Jack LaLanne's partner and sidekick forever. And her nickname is Lala.
You want to know how I got that?
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. You know, it's a lot of people, how did you get that name Lala? And you'll see I have Lala Land all over the place. We were being introduced at one time by some friends. And they were introducing us to their friends. Mm-hmm. And so one of them said, this is Elaine. I mean, this is Elaine. And Jack just said, oh, just call her Lala. So that's how I got my name.
And that stuck. There are people that's how they know you, right?
But yeah, most everybody calls me Lala. I didn't get that name until later in life, mm-hmm. You know. I've had all sorts of names, Laney Bug, and all sorts of, you know, nicknames, Lanums, you know.
Let's go back in time. Before you met Jack LaLanne.
Okay.
And that you were a star in your own right once you came out to the West Coast in San Francisco. You're one of the first television hosts in the whole history of television.
You know, television was really in its infancy. And they called me the Betty White of San Francisco. Before that, when television was first coming in, the television went on at 6 o'clock a night. Uh-huh. And with a little bit of news, and then they had a commercial. And so I was working out of a modeling agency at that time, and they called me up. All of the people that they chose were going up to this transmitter. It was called KRON in those days in San Francisco. And so Danny, my son, was only like, he was like 2-3 months old, and that was 1948. So I took this taxi up to the transmitter.
Why'd they want you to go to the transmitter?
Because there's no studios in those days.
Oh, my gosh.
I forgot to tell you. See, that's a good question. You know, there were no studios in those days. We had to do all of the television out of transmitters. And the transmitter had to be on top of a mountain.
Yeah.
A big, great big, I call them mountains, but hills or whatever. Anyway. So I went up there, and all these beautiful girls were there, and I thought, oh, my God, I can't. And I was the last one that they took. They all went into this room, and they came out, and they were just all dressed up so pretty, and here I was just a new mother at that time. So I went in, and they said, okay, open this bag. This is a grocery bag. Now open this bag, pull out the bread, open it up, and then smell it and say, good. And I did. I got it. I got the commercial.
So
that's how I first started in television.
Mm-hmm. But you became a host of a television
yes,
show.
Yes, and then later on, through this this agency, now I was out. Demonstrating 45 records. So I was at the Emporium in San Francisco and demonstrating, and people would come up and say, can I get Bing Crosby on the 45 records? I said, no, but you can get Perry Como, and he sounds just like him. And so this fellow came over and said, I'm starting a television show on KGO-TV, and I want you to like to talk to you about being on with me.
And this was 1948?
This was 1949.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that's what I went over. Because television now is coming on at 4:30 in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. Not any earlier. So then I went over and talked to him, and he said, can you have a show by Tuesday? And I said, yes. And so I don't know what I was doing. He says, call Bill Blake over at the wharf and call the Kern and Geary and call these people, and all these people come to town in the movies and whatnot. So I did. That's how I started booking an hour and a half show every day from 4:30 to 6.
And you were the host, co-host.
I was the co-host. Mm-hmm. But in those days, I was called a Girl Friday.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's how I started in television. And then I got this call from Oakland, California. We got this guy who, this is about 1950, he said, we got this guy who can do push-ups for your whole show. And I said, oh, that'd be great. And we'll pull him over the corner and he can do push-ups. So that's what we did. For an hour and a half, he did push-ups.
And that's the first time you met Jack?
Yes. And of course, I didn't date him till 3 years later. So, but then I didn't see him for, you know, he started the show in 51 then. But that's how I first met Jack, and that's how I started in television. But at KGO, we had to go up to Sutro Mansion. Now, Sutro Mansion was a mansion of the Sutros. They're very famous in San Francisco. And we went into the ballroom, and that's where we had the show. And then Marty Pesetta, he was our floor man. He did 18 Academy Awards. He was a director. But he started, and that's where he started, too. And he was our, he was younger, but he was our floor man. A lot of people started in San Francisco, and in a lot of country and western. I can go on and on and on, and I only have a few minutes to tell my story. You know, Jack used to say to me, you know, my wife, she likes to run. She likes to run up my bills and run off at the mouth. So I'm running off at the mouth.
No, that's great. That's what we want. So back in time, when you became a TV host in San Francisco in 1949, it really wasn't on your radar that you were a trend-setting woman, right? You were just thought, oh, this would be cool to do.
Yeah, I just did what I had to do. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of people say, oh, you're a woman, and didn't you have this, and didn't that happen to you? No, I never, I worked with men all my life, and I never had one problem. You know, when people try to make me say things, I can't say them because I didn't experience them. And if unless I experience something, I can't tell you about it.
Right. So you just wanted a job and you got the job?
Well, I got the job. I just, you know, and then I, you see, when I get a job, I give my heart and soul to that job. Mm-hmm. And if I have to spend extra hours, I spend extra hours because I want that job done perfect. So a lot of people, they do what they want to do with their jobs, but I, that's the way I, that's the way I live my life, and I've lived it all my life, and I'm 96 years old.
Okay, so you're on TV, and you have Jack LaLanne doing push-ups in the corner.
Yep.
And then it took you 3 years to date the guy?
I had him on, you know, and he did the push-ups, and then he was on Art Baker's You Asked For It show and did 1,033 push-ups in 23 minutes. I was really impressed with that, too. But one of the fellows at KGO, Vince Francis, knew Jack, and he wanted... Somebody had a wafer called Kiva Wets, and they wanted somebody to sell it. So Vince called Jack and said, I want you to come over. I want you to start a television show. So he sent his gal over that worked for me who'd lost 100 pounds. And he says, called Jack, and he says, I don't want her. I want you. And so that's how Jack started. He says, I'm not a television person. I don't know anything about television. But that's how he started on television. And then when he started, now we're moved from the transmitter down to the NBC building where they had studios. And so we were broadcasting out of there, and we had an office. It was called the newsroom, and it had about six people in it. And I'd walk in every morning, and he'd be talking to our director, who was on our show, too, in the afternoon, and Jocks. Her name was Dorothy Hooker Nye, and she was one of the first woman directors. And so I'd walk by with my chocolate donut and my bear claw and my cigarette and smoking cigarettes. And one day he kind of sauntered over to my back in the back of the room, and he said, you know, you ought to be eating apples and bananas and oranges instead of this stuff. And, you know, and he says, you know, the thing good about the donut is the hole in the middle. Anyway, I blew, but I said, oh, yeah. But anyway, that's how I met. But as time went on, we knew each other from the station, and then he used to ask me to dinner or lunch, and I would go, and then, because I was separated then from my first husband. And then finally one night he asked me to go to dinner, and I said yes. We went out with his buddies, and one was a chiropractor and one was a mortuary, had a mortuary. And we had such a good time, and I said, oh, gosh, you know, in those days I thought muscle men didn't have much upstairs, you know. That's the way they made them in the movies. So I said, gosh, we had danced a little bit at the company party, you know, and just ditterbugged a little bit. When he, we went out to dinner, and we started talking, and I said, gosh, she's got a great mind, you know. And then we went to wait for our dinner, and so we went next door to this bar. So the piano player said, come on over, Jack, and sing a song, because Jack loved to sing. He was a great singer. And so he sang, because you're mine, da-da-da-dee-da-da. Oh, my goodness, I said, he's singing. I thought to myself, he sings, too. But anyway, that's the beginning of our relationship, and it continued all those years. We went together 6 years before we were married.
Oh, wow. So when did Jack start his first TV show?
And was 1951.
And was it on KGO?
KGO TV. Uh-huh. That's where we met, and I was at Conchate KGO, too. So you must interrupt me when I start talking too much.
No, I love it. So when he started the show, did you work with him on the show or not for a while?
No, because Les Molloy bought a country and western station. So when he first started the show, I know I never worked. He did everything himself. Mm-hmm. He did everything ad lib. It all came out of his, you know, head. But, and he tried to do every part of your body on in every show. And he would go through 24 minutes exactly without any, you know, retakes or anything
not,
like that.
And not scripted, just
non-scripted, off top of, yeah. Right.
My mom and every mom I knew in the Bay Area growing up, that was a religious part of their life, was watching and
that's
exercising
right.
to Jack LaLanne.
Yes, that's true. And he had this charisma, you know. And you know, one of the reasons I think he didn't want two cameras, he wanted one camera. He said, I want to talk to that camera. I want to talk to the people out there. I want to talk to mostly housewives in those days. And he looked into that camera, and he felt the other person. And he always, see, he said in his lifetime, it's all I've ever heard is I want to help people to help themselves. And that's what he believed in. That's the way he lived his life. And he had great discipline.
Mm-hmm. He really was a true trendsetter and a visionary when it comes to health, healthy living, healthy eating, exercising. And he's the one, talk to us about his gym that he started, which was really the first modern spa gym.
Right. It was the first modern, because in 1936, when he first started, there were gyms. I know a lot of the people called them sweat boxes, but they had, you know, barbells and dumbbells, and then they had clean and jerk, and they did all those bodybuilding, and that's what they usually used, the barbells and dumbbells. So he came along, and he opened in 1936 the first modern hill spa.
And this was in Oakland, California.
In Oakland, California. He had a football injury when he was in high school, and so that football injury, the doctor said he'd never walk again. So he rehabilitated himself and was able to walk and do the things he wanted to do. So this is what he decided to build up his legs, and he invented the leg extension machine.
Uh-huh.
And so I have, you know, I have the first leg extension machine. And then he invented the first weight selector. In those days they had the round weights with the hole in the middle. So he had a little mechanism that went like a pole that went down in there, and then you could
select how many weights
you want, 10 pounds, 5 pounds, or whatever.
Yeah. So were you going to read something from Jack here?
Oh, well, you know, Jack had a great sense of humor, and I just thought, Keith Morrison on Dateline, you know, used to come every 5 years and interview Jack, but his first time he came, you know, one of the quips in the humor section in the book, Pride and Discipline, the Legacy of Jack LaLanne, in his own words and those he's inspired. This quip, it says, there's nothing I wouldn't do for my wife. There's nothing she would do for me. So we spend our lives doing nothing for each other, Jack quipped to Keith Morrison during a Dateline interview. There's a lot of funny things that he said. I never told my stomach I'm a poor man, you know. And then he wrote, I hate to wake up in the morning and find myself dead, you know. And they'd come right off the top of his head. I said, Jack, I'll be there shortly. He says, I'll be there longly, you know. Things like that. And then Fan would say, I used to watch you. And he says, now I'm watching you. Stuff like that, you know. It's really funny.
So I need to interrupt because we got ahead of the curve. You are reading from your new book, which just came out. The name of the book is?
Pride and Discipline, The Legacy of Jack LaLanne in His Own Words and Those He's Inspired. Now, talk about discipline. I said earlier about discipline, about Jack had great discipline. And he had great mind power. Remember I said, I tell everybody, oh, the women tell me, oh my gosh, that he had a great body. I said, honey, I didn't fall in love with his body. I fell in love with his brain. Mm-hmm. So he had great mind power. And so that is one of the things that you'll find throughout the book about the mind as a mine. It's full of diamonds, and all you have to do is dig them up. So, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. But in section one, it talks about I tell my kind of my little story about KGO and everything, and then this is an introduction of Jack, and so I bring in a lot of stuff in there, and then he goes into then the mind power, mindset, attitude, visualization, and success. He has, you know, attitudes really count, habits and goals, overcoming obstacles, dare to dream, motivation, how to be motivated. In not giving up. Now, in visualizing, he visualized his swim. When he swam from Alcatraz to the mainland, handcuffed, he visualized him coming out of the water. Well, also, that was when he was 41. At 60 years old, he swam from Alcatraz to the mainland, handcuffed. Feet were shackled and towing a 1,000-pound boat. On his 70th birthday, he towed 70 boats with 70 people in, you know, a person in each boat, a mile and a half in Long Beach Harbor, handcuffed and That's feet shackled.
Crazy.
So, I mean, he visualized all of these things, and he had great endurance. He trained for not only body building a good body, but for endurance. So many bodybuilders, they just train for strength, and they don't think about endurance. He could go swimming for an hour or two, you know, to go down to Muscle Beach. I said, where is he? He's out there for an hour. I started worrying about him, you know.
We're at your house right now. Do you have a pool here?
Yes. He swam every day. Yeah. He worked out every day for 2 hours, and then he swam. He swam after that.
Wow.
Or he'd work out an hour and swim an hour.
Let's loop back for a moment, because he really is the godfather of the modern-day health spas around the world, across America. And so he wound up syndicating and franchising the Jack LaLanne spas around America and overseas. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, that's when people came to him and they wanted to put his name on this. Mm-hmm. And a bunch of people got together that had spas. And they, they had, you know, gyms. They got together and they wanted to have a Jack LaLanne. So they had, in the West was Jack LaLanne European House Spas, and in the East was Jack LaLanne Health Spas.
And again, talk to us about how the evolution and the breadth, how revolutionary his spas were, what they offered people that had not been offered before.
Well, he believed he would, when he would go around, because in those days they didn't have personal trainers. But he said you have to pay attention to every one of your people. He would always preach, you cannot, see a lot of people, they'd say, well, I don't feel like continuing on, and they would give up. And what he would always do is, if he had his own gym, he would call people up and says, where are you? You get back down here, you know. And so he tried to get that over to all the people that, when he would lecture to all these people that were in the spa business, mm-hmm. that and he didn't care who it was. He just said, you've got to give them instruction. You've got to help them. You've got to be there with them. And, you know, to go around and pay attention to each person, not just let them be on their own and try to do their thing. Mm-hmm. But that's what he believed in.
Over your shoulder, there's a giant glass display case.
Yes.
With rows and rows of products.
Yes.
And again, talk to us about some of the evolutionary trend-setting things that he introduced to America and the world that are still part of people's, what they eat.
If you are using a protein drink, that's started from Jack. We were mixing some stuff together and putting it in the blender. And he says, you know, this is an instant breakfast. Let's go over to my friend who is a biochemist and have him make some protein for us, protein drink. He mm-hmm. believed in it so strongly. And this was in the 1950s. None of those drinks out there like they are today. So that's what we did. We had the first instant breakfast. And later on, after Carnation did our instantizing for us, and then he would never, ever come out with any product unless he had exercises with it. Mm-hmm. If he came out with the protein, you got to exercise. Exercise is king, nutrition's queen, put them together and you got a kingdom. Mm-hmm. So that's why you have to have exercise and the nutrition together, and then you've got it made. So you don't overdo one or the other. So that's, now we started that. Then we had all sorts of vitamins, vitamin C. You name the vitamins and we had it. We had Pro 60 and Pro 70 protein tablets, one for gaining weight and one for losing weight.
When back to his TV show, it started in San Francisco at KGO.
Yes.
But then it exploded and was syndicated not only across America, but overseas.
Yes. Well, what happened was we couldn't syndicate out of San Francisco because they didn't have the opportunity to do it in those days. So we went to Los Angeles and Jack got on KTTV. So now we're live in San Francisco. We're live in Los Angeles, Jack is. So now he's telling me, syndicate. In order for us, we had to set that all up. We had two shows going. So Jack told me I have to do the show in San Francisco and he'll do the show in LA and then he'll do it for a week and then you fly down and do the show in L.A. So for a while there, we were flying back and forth,
wow.
trying to get this thing together. And then finally, we got a syndicator. Then we started in New York. And then we went to Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., and all the big cities. And then some of the little smaller ones.
So you were on the TV show with him.
Yes.
Doing exercises.
Yeah, not at the beginning, but mm-hmm. later on. So he decided that I should be on the show.
All right. Well, share us a little bit more from the book, some of your favorite.
His swims are one of the things that were really, you see all sorts of pictures in the book on that. I've got his writings, and we've got these little pieces of paper that I took pictures of, and then we put them in the book. And then one place in there, he says, he tells about how he feels. He's at a restaurant in San Francisco training, and his first day of training, how cold the water was and how he got numb. And then the next day, he has some notes and little pieces of paper, and then I translate them in there because you can't read. Jack, I can't read your writing. He says, I can't read yours.
You showed me a picture, and you had him in a bathtub, and you filled up him in the bathtub with ice.
That was for training before he went to San Francisco to train for that 60th birthday swim. He said, when we were living in Los Angeles, mm-hmm. go down to La Brea, and go to the ice house and get me 50 pounds of ice. And he says, I'm going to sit in the bathtub for an hour and to get used to the cold water in San Francisco. So I would go down every day and get this great big 50-pound, and then I have a picture of me pouring the ice on top of him in the book. So, and the back of the book, there's a timeline, pictures of him as a little boy and when he was young, when he was skinny, and then he was building himself up.
He was a runt, wasn't he? He was, huh? He was a runt.
Yeah, well, Jack was not very tall.
But when he was a kid, he was, like you said, he was sickly.
Sickly. He was. Paul Bragg is one of the people that he went to his lecture when he was 14 years old. And Paul Bragg said something. His mother actually dragged him there. And that story's in the book, too. And, dropped out of school for 6 months because he was ill health. And so he went to this lecture, and he didn't want to go. There were no seats available. And Paul Bragg says, "Lady with the little boy, bring 2 seats and put him here on the stage." And, gosh, he had boils and pimples. And, he was a mess. And he says, "I was so embarrassed sitting up there on the stage." But there was one thing that Paul Bragg said. And he said that was, "I don't care what your age is. I don't care what your physical condition is. You can be reborn again." That changed Jack's life forever.
Wow.
And so then he joined the YMCA, and everything started there. Mm-hmm. At 14 and a half, he heard that. And so his life changed forever. And he bought Gray's Anatomy. He learned all about the workings of the body. Later on in life, he became a chiropractor.
A licensed chiropractor.
Yes. But he did not practice because he was having a lot of his friends that were doctors, and they were coming to his gym, and they were MDs. And the MDs and the chiropractors were at odds in those days. So that was a no-no. So he didn't let anybody know he was a chiropractor until later in life.
At some point, you guys moved to the Central Coast, to Morro Bay.
Yeah.
When did that happen and why?
Well, Jack had a buddy, a high school buddy, and was a veterinarian in Honolulu, and he was retiring over here. And so he brought 10 acres out on 41, and we went to visit him. One day, we said, "Oh my gosh!" But Jack knew Morro Bay. His brother was stationed here during World War II for a while, and then Jack came down to play baseball here with a team, and so he knew about Morro Bay. We used to come up to the Golden Tee, and we would play golf because we'd just taken up golf in the '60s. And then when Bill and Rachel, their his buddy, we're here, he said, "Well, let's buy some property." We never thought we were going to move here. Mm-hmm. We thought we'd buy some property and maybe have a second place up here and come on the weekends, and which we did. And then that's what happened.
Is this the property you bought? Is that where we are right now?
Yes. Uh-huh. Yeah. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
So what year did you move to Morro Bay?
Permanently in 86.
And you moved from L.A.?
Moved from Los Angeles, uh-huh. Right. Mm-hmm. We went from San Francisco to Los Angeles to Morro Bay.
So how does somebody learn more about your world, your book, and Jack LaLanne? Do you have a website, a go-to website?
Yes, we have jacklaLaLanne.com. And so if anybody wants to know anything about Jack LaLanne, we have JackLaLanne.com, and that's all you have to look. And then LaLanne is spelled L-A-L-A-N-N-E. And my book, you can get on Amazon. And you can, all my other books, I have a book, and another book I just finished before this one, which was If You Want to Live, Move, Putting the Boom Back into Boomers. And that's a book, too. And
So again, the new book, the title again.
The title is Pride and Discipline, The Legacy of Jack LaLanne in His Own Words and Those He's Inspired. The foreword is by Lou Ferrigno. You'll see quotes from Tony Danza, Arnold Schwarzenegger, everybody that's read the book right now. It's just out. So it was on the bestseller list on Amazon for when it first came out.
Well,
I don't know what it is now, but anyway, everybody that's read it has said, "It's a great book. It's a great book." And we see the reason that we've written this book with Greg Justice is my co-author. And he's the one that talked me into doing it. We want to get to the people that don't know Jack. That's exactly what I first started, introduction in the book. Who is Jack LaLanne? The young people say, "Oh, I never heard of him. Oh, who's he?" You know. So I'm hoping that people will know who Jack LaLanne is through this book, at least get them talking about it and hearing the name Jack LaLanne. Because a lot of times people think that everything started with Jane Fonda and Richard Simmons, which are good friends. But, I mean, that era, it started way before that in the 30s. Jack LaLanne, that's when he started getting known in the bodybuilding industry. But in the juicer. People, you're the ones that put the fruit in the big juicer. You were the first
to introduce
modern juicer. That great big hole in the
You have some over there.
I have a juicer. So Jack juiced ever since he was a teenager. Uh-huh. He used to do presses. But anyway, a lot of people don't know that. Well, that's the guy, you know, with the juicer. But they don't know the background. They don't know 1936 and all that.
Yeah.
So this book is going to tell you about it.
The whole story.
It's all about discipline. And you only have you to blame for any problems that come into your life. Look into yourself first. Don't try to blame somebody else for your problems, because if you look in and use introspection in yourself, you'll find that maybe one of the problems was you, you know. And I do that all the time. I said, you know what? That was my fault, not anybody else's fault. When that happened to me, I did it.
That's so cool because we need more of that, taking responsibility for ourselves.
We have to take responsibility for ourselves, and this is through the book too.
LaLanne, thank you so much for visiting. What a great day.
Thank you. I hope that those people that are interested will get the book. It's on Amazon. I was even inspired editing it. I mean, every time I read it, I said, gosh, he's inspired me one more time. Mm-hmm. The way he writes is so inspiring.
And plus, you can hear his voice.
I can hear him say that. Life is great when you're in shape, he says.
I love it. LaLanne, thanks again. What a pleasure.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome. I'm your host, Tom Wilmer. We've been visiting with LaLanne LaLanne, known affectionately as Lala.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world. To learn more about Tom Wilmer's journeys around America and the world, log on to thomaswilmer.com.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.